Good evening, everyone. We'll be looking at Mark a little bit further into the lesson this evening. But it's one of those passages of Scripture that when you look at it, I hope it gives you an idea of what I want to talk about this evening. The idea of purity is something that is a concept that is, I think, spread throughout all of the Scriptures, from the Old Testament to the New Testament. You go to the Old Testament, you go back and you look at all of the different purification rituals that Israel had to go through. If they touched something that was unclean, they had to purify themselves. If they ate something that was unclean, they had to purify themselves. It was a long process. And in the New Testament, purity is something that is necessary to our lives as children of God. And within the context of Mark chapter 7, what you immediately see is the addressing of the inner man, the heart of man, is where that purity needs to be. Now, I don't know how many of you in the auditorium drink bottled water from time to time, or maybe you like to do it regularly. And the reason you do that is very likely that you are looking for what they claim, make the claim on the bottles, pure water. You want everything filtered out of it. I remember back, it's probably been 13, 14, 15 years ago, when bottled water was really starting to take off. And it was really becoming popular. And you had all of these different brands out there. That one brand of bottled water got in trouble because they talked about it themselves being pure spring water. And it come to find out that all they were doing was they were filling their bottles with tap water. Now, the city of Fort Smith, they have a water treatment facility. And if it meets a certain, that water meets a certain pH level or meets certain government standards, then it's considered to be pure water. Something that's we value, don't we? We value purity. We value purity in gold, because the more pure gold is, the more valuable it is. The clearer a diamond is, the purity of that diamond, the more expensive it is. And so we each one of us value purity. And I think that's what Jesus is trying to get his disciples to understand, that we need to value what's inside of us, because what's inside of us will manifest itself outwardly. And so I want us to consider that this evening. And I want to give you another illustration here real quick. And I want you to think about this. I've only got part of the illustration on this next screen. But I want you to consider what it says here real quick before I give you the rest of the illustration. Two theological students were walking along a street in the Whitechapel district of London, a section where old and used clothing is sold. "What a fitting illustration all this makes," said one of the students as he pointed out a suit of clothes hanging on a rack by a window. And the sign says, "Slightly soiled, greatly reduced in price." Now, I want you to consider that thought for just a minute, because whether we realize it or not, if we are not living holy lives, if we are not living pure lives, then our lives are soiled, aren't they? Well, these two young men would continue to walk down the street, and they were saying, "That's exactly right," he continued. "We get soiled by gazing at a vulgar picture, reading a coarse book, or allowing ourselves a little indulgence in dishonest or lustful thoughts. And so when the time comes for our character to be appraised, we are greatly reduced in value." And I see that Jesus in Mark chapter 7, when he's addressing his disciples and they're questioning him about the meaning of what he was teaching, trying to get them to understand the things that can originate in the heart, where sin begins to develop in our thoughts and then manifests itself outwardly. And Jesus mentions or gives a list of things that he's talking about, things that they understand, things that they can comprehend. In Proverbs chapter 22, in verse 11, it says, "He who loves purity in heart has grace on his lips. The king will be his friend." Consider for just a moment in our relationship as children of God. He is our king. He is our creator, our ruler, And the thing is, do we cherish that? Do we love the purity of heart that's supposed to be in us? Because all too often, and I've used this illustration before, is, and I partly used it this morning about a child of God who is, when we're talking about using that phrase, "You ain't got me yet." Even though the child of God has been baptized for the remission of their sins and raised up out of that watery grave, sometimes they try to live in two worlds, don't they? They try to be of the world and of the kingdom. And we end up flirting with sin in our lives, trying to see how close we can get to it or before we cross over the line. And I use it this way. You all can't necessarily see my feet in the back, but my feet are hanging over the edge up here right now. I knew a preacher. Well, I still know the preacher. He's still alive. I know a preacher that stands like this all the time when he's preaching, with his feet hanging over the edge. And I've seen him in pulpits that were 3 and 4 feet up off the floor, standing like this, and just waiting for him to fall. He got comfortable there. He could do it. He could preach like that all the time. And he's not the only preacher that's ever been like that. But when it comes to sin, when it comes to the impurities of life that we flirt with, we're endangering ourselves of not just stumbling, but falling headlong, headfirst into that sin. Now, we need to value this type of purity. And so you have to ask the question, well, is there a need for purity of heart? I think what Jesus is addressing in Mark chapter 7 is saying, yes, there's a need for you to practice purity of heart. But I want you to look at it from this standpoint. If there's a need for purity of heart, it's because, one, because those who will be pure of heart, they will one day see God. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 8 in Sermon on the Mount, "Blessed are the pure in heart." For what? "For they shall see God." They're the ones that, if they're pure in heart, they're not locked into the world, but they're locked into things that are spiritual. They're locked into those things that have a desire to be pleasing to God in everything and in every way. They know that they are imperfect beings. They know that they're going to need God's grace, God's mercy in the end anyway. But their desire is like that little child who wants nothing more but to be able to experience the love of their Father. And for those who are pure of heart that will see God, what they're wanting to do is they want to experience the eternal love of the Father. And I want you to consider that Paul also taught this. I want you to think about this in 2 Timothy chapter 2 for just a moment. He's talking to a young preacher. And he's telling him that there's going to be things in his life that he needs to run away from. And he tells him there in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22 to flee youthful lusts. But he says, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. See, those who are going to pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace are those who, again, have that desire to live eternally with the Father. And so remember, whoever calls on the Lord shall be saved is what we're told in the book of Acts. But we also must remember, not everyone that says to me, "Lord, Lord," will enter the kingdom of heaven. But he that does the will of my Father is what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7. And when we consider that and keep that in mind, what we're doing then is we are going to try our very best to pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace. And we're going to make that pursuit in the right way. Pursue it with a pure heart. That word pursue is used over and over again within the New Testament. And I don't know if you ever watch Olympics cycling. They have in their velodromes, they have cycling events, and one of which is called the pursuit. What they do is you have two teams of bicycle riders on opposite sides of the track. And what they are trying to do is overtake one another. They are in pursuit of them. And really, when I think about this in our lives, when we're told to pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, we're not supposed to be just running after them. We're supposed to be catching up to them and making them part of our lives. But we do it with the right and proper mindset. Peter taught it in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 22 and 23. And you think about what has transpired. He's talking to Christians here in these verses. And he makes mention to them there, since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit, in sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently. How? With a pure heart. Having been born again, not of corruptible seed, but incorruptible, through the Word of God which lives and abides forever. Consider for just a moment that Peter's talking about purifying our souls. How did we do that? We did that in obedience to the gospel, didn't we? But we have to maintain that purity. And we maintain that type of purity in our relationship to one another when we love one another with a pure heart. But the word soul that Peter uses within that context, he's referring to the inner man, the same inner man that Jesus is referring to back in Mark chapter 7. Because the biblical heart is the control center of our lives. Purifying our souls then becomes necessary part of a process of being born again. You see, being born again, let me suggest this. Being born again isn't simply just being buried in baptism and pulled back up out of the water. It is a transformation of life that has to take place that begins there and must be maintained once we've come up out of that watery grave. And without it, Jesus has said, will not enter into the kingdom of heaven. So, what does purity of heart involve? That's what I want us to consider for the remainder of these types of thoughts for the remainder of our lesson this evening. What does it involve, and what springs forth from it in our lives? So, I want you to consider it involves more a concern for what's in our heart. You've heard it said in the computer world. Garbage in, garbage out. You've heard that used before, I'm sure, and that is very true. Garbage in is a programmer's nightmare, and it doesn't take a whole lot for something like that to happen. I'm going to give you an example real quick of my early years trying to learn computer programming the archaic way, key punching. Computer language called COBOL. Oh, it's an old language. I don't think it's ever used anymore. And if it is, it's just somebody's being nostalgic, I think, in using it. But it was a key punch thing. It required accuracy in your typing in the keystrokes. And let's put it this way: in today's modern computer languages, accuracy is still involved with the keystroke. But what you would do is you would go to the key punch machine. You'd punch everything in. Then your cards would stack up. And then you'd feed the cards into this feeder, and then it would read the cards for you. All it took was one keystroke to be off to get this long list of syntax errors. Why did that computer program not work? Because what went into the original program ended up being garbage. And sometimes you had to go back through and try to figure out where you went wrong. I hated COBOL for that very reason, because I don't type well. You know I don't type well. You see typos on my slides all the time. But just consider this. Purity of heart involves what's in our heart, what goes into it. And when you look at Mark chapter 7, and you go back and you see what Jesus is addressing there. And again, pay attention to the words here, because I want us to go to his explanation is what I want to go to. Because you look at verse 20, and he says, "And what comes out of a man, that defiles a man." Okay? Go back to verse 18. "Are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him?" Now, he's talking about food. I understand that. But what are these? What have you, your eyes and your ears? What we see, what we allow ourselves to see, what we allow ourselves to hear, those don't go into the stomach, do they? How many times have you heard someone say, "The windows are the eyes to the soul"? Are the eyes, I got it backwards, didn't I? The eyes are the windows to the soul. See, aren't you glad I'm not a perfect preacher? You don't get to laugh otherwise. Now look, the eyes are the windows to the soul. And it's true because, one, that's what we see the world with. It's with the eyes that we start making judgments and discerning what's going on around us. It's with the eyes that the lust of the eye comes into play, and then we start making up our minds whether we like what we see or we dislike what we see. But it's also through those windows that we allow either garbage in or we can get the garbage out. Same thing's true with our ears. What we allow ourselves to listen to, or the type of things we like to listen to, can be garbage at some times. And all it does then is it makes us just a little more impure, a little more soiled, like that first illustration did. And our values becomes diminished along the way. It's not the things from the outside, the food, that can defile a person, but it's what's right here. It's what we allow ourselves to think. It's what we allow ourselves to express that comes from that same heart. It's what manifests itself in our lives. And then Jesus went on, then back down in verse 21, "For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, and evil eye. I gave Cindy the old evil eye at lunch today. She said something to me, and she looked right back at me the same way and said, "Don't do that." We make fun of the old evil eye, but I think it's more than just the staring them down. He's not talking about just staring somebody down. He's talking about the intent behind the look too. But you think about it. Evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness, all of these things come from within and defile a man. So, it involves concern over what's in our hearts, doesn't it? What do we allow in? We live in a different time than when Jesus lived. We live in a digital world, don't we? We live in an electronic world. We have a high-speed internet. We have access to Wi-Fi just about anywhere we go. We have cell phones that have 4G, and we can access the internet. We can access internet radio. We can access videos 24 hours a day, 7 days a week now. And you know what? People talk and praise the internet all the time. And yet what you're starting to hear more and more about, whether it be in the news or wherever, you start hearing about the dark web. That's a side of the internet that a child of God has no business with. Why? Because that would be garbage in. That would be allowing ourselves to view those things and look at those things that are impure, and caused our inner man to become impure. And you think about what Jesus was talking about right here, some of the things that would come out of that, it would produce what? Evil thoughts. Maybe adulteries and fornications could be a result of experiencing the dark web. Maybe the murders and thefts. What about covetousness, wanting what belongs to somebody else? Whether it be their property or whether it be their spouse. Do you see how all this works? Because what we allow here, we have to have a filter on it before it gets in here to make sure that it's pure. So we do that by considering the things that Paul would say in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. We would start meditating on things that are pure, things that are lovely, things that are of good report. Turn to Philippians chapter 4 and look at those things. Here is a process, a thought that we can use to help eliminate the impurities in our lives. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Don't just give them a cursory glance. Don't just skim them. Learning how to read faster didn't always mean that I learned how to comprehend what I was reading. All it meant was I may be just skimming it just to get highlights. Don't skim through life that way. And don't skim through things that are such a way that when it comes to our reading of the Scriptures daily, think about what's being said. Meditate on it. You don't have to sit on the floor and cross your legs and fold your fingers out and start humming to yourself. But give careful thought to what's being processed in your mind at the time. Give careful thought to what Jesus is saying over in Mark chapter 7. Give careful thought to what Paul's saying right here in Philippians chapter 4 about those things that can help purify your mind. See, purity of heart then also involves having a good conscience. In Hebrews chapter 9, verses 9 through 14, it is said there, it was symbolic for the present time in which both gifts and sacrifices are offered, which cannot make him who performed the service perfect in regard to the conscience. What are you talking about? We're talking about the earthly sanctuary. We're talking about the limitations of the priests that lived before and the sacrifices that were offered by them and the limitations that are on them, not being able to give them a pure conscience, regard to the conscience. Verse 10, concerned only with foods and drinks and various washings and fleshly ordinances imposed until the time of reformation. But Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation, not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifies for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God. It's understanding the sacrifice and the role of Jesus Christ in our lives even today that can purify our hearts. Consider for just a moment again that in all of this, we should always strive to maintain a good conscience. But when we sin, our consciences are violated, our consciences become impure, and the only way to keep a good conscience is to receive forgiveness of sins. In Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 22, the writer there then says, let us draw near with a true heart in the full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. That can only be done through Jesus Christ. Now, what springs forth from it? Is there benefits from the pure heart? Well, absolutely there are. One of the things that will take place is we're going to end up treating people with respect. You've seen on the news today, in the past several months, not even just the past several months, probably the past couple of decades, we've seen how people do not treat people properly. Whether it is men mistreating women or women mistreating for others or anybody mistreating somebody, people are not showing their fellow man the proper respect of being one of God's creations. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, Paul tells Timothy that he needs to respect those who are older. Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older men as mothers, younger as sisters, with all purity. And if we are striving to be pure in heart, then we will want to make sure that all of our relationship with other individuals are conducted with respect and purity. We will also have a willingness to help others. When I think about James chapter 1 and verse 27, we will have that pure and undefiled religion in us before God and the Father that is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. To keep oneself unspotted from the world means we want to remove all of the impurities in our lives. Remember, I talked about the value of gold being much higher when it is pure. The process of purifying gold is to remove all of the dross, all of the impurities, and when the jeweler or whoever's doing the purification can see a reflection of themselves in that purified gold, then they know that it's pure. The same thing is true of our lives as children of God. When we go through this process of purifying our lives, when God can see Himself in us, we know that we're true children of God. Because we have sought to change our minds. We've sought to be transformed from the world, not conformed to it any longer. We've sought to remove all the garbage that is around us from our lives. And we then develop a hope that compels us to be like God. I want you to turn to 1 John chapter 3. And when I say be like God, I know that we're not going to be like Him in power. But we're talking about being like Him in character. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us that we should be called children of God. That's verse 1 of chapter 3, 1 John chapter 3, verse 1. Therefore, the world does not know us because it did not know Him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when He is revealed, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. And everyone who has this hope in Him purifies himself just as He is pure. The Hebrew writer says of Jesus Christ, and the Hebrew writer is not the only one that says this, but it gives and presents to us a thought that Jesus Christ is the express image of the Father. That's not just there stated there in Hebrews. But you think about this. Talks about Jesus Christ, He who made the worlds, who being the brightness of His glory and the express image of His person, and upholding all things by the word of His power, when he had by Himself purged our sins, sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high. Listen to those words. He is the brightness of His glory. He is the express image of His person. And yet, if we go over here, we don't know exactly what we're going to be in maybe physical form or spiritual form. But I do know this about my Father and the Son. They are pure. And there is value in purity. we develop a hope that compels us to be like God. We are children of God now because we have been born into His spiritual family, and we strive every day to be like Him, or should be striving if we're not. But when Christ comes, we'll be changed, and then we will take on that eternal image. But we cannot take on that eternal image if what is here right now is not pure on the inside. I can tell you this about water. We've got a refrigerator at home that has a water filter on it, so that when you go to the door to get water, that water's supposed to be filtered, and whatever impurities that remain in the water that the city provides is supposed to remove most of those. At our kitchen sink, we have what's called a pure water filter on the spigot. And you flip a switch, and when you let it run for a little while, the light flashes until when it stops flashing, then you can start putting your glass under there and filling your glass up, because it's starting to filter the water and make it purer than what it was. I understand that as individuals today, we are not going to be perfect. But if we really are going to be God's children, we can strive to be like Him in purity. And which means we start changing the way we think, the way we talk, the things we look at, the things we allow to entertain us in our lives, because all of those things have an influence. And we start meditating on better things, things that will draw us closer to God. It was said that after a violent storm one night, a large tree, which over the years had become a stately giant, was found lying across the pathway in a park. Nothing but a splintered stump was left. Close upon closer examination, it was shown that the inside of that tree was rotten. Because thousands of tiny insects had eaten away at its heart. The weakness of that tree was not brought on by the sudden storm. It began the very moment the first insect nested within its bark. Same thing is true with us. When we start experiencing weakness, it's when we start allowing those impurities in our lives. And the only way to resolve that is to get rid of them. Though everyone starts out life with purity of heart, all reasonable people or responsible people eventually enter a time in their lives where they begin to sin. And the only way that we can regain that purity is through our Son, Savior, Jesus Christ. In Titus chapter 2, verses 13 and 14, we're told there that looking for the blessed hope and glorious appearing of our great God and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave Himself for us, that He might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for Himself His own special people zealous for good works. He died so that we did not have to remain impure. He died so that we could be pure in the sight of God. And now He's given us the opportunity to live that pure life, to bring us to time where we stand before Him in judgment, to where we can hear words of "well done, good and faithful servant." And that should be our desire. It's not what enters into our mouth that defiles us. It's what proceeds out of us that does defile us. And so perhaps there is someone here tonight who might recognize that their heart is not as pure as it needs to be, and as an erring child of God would like the prayers and the encouragement of brethren. We stand ready to assist you with that, to reconcile your life to God. Or if you've never obeyed the gospel, that opportunity is yours too. See, that newness of life is just that. It's new. Have you ever enjoyed sitting in a brand new car and got that new car smell? Some people don't like new car smell. I realize that. But there's something different about new car smell and a car that's been driven a year or two down the road. because over a year or two, the impurities begin to come in. It's not as clean as it once was. But you as a child of God can be buried in baptism to rise and walk in newness of life, and all the purities will be washed away. And you can start fresh. And you can stay that way if you remain faithful to God till the day that you die. Now, if you're subject to the Lord's invitation, the song that we're about to sing offers you that opportunity. But don't leave here tonight almost persuaded. Leave here fully persuaded that you need to be pure in the sight of God. Won't you come as together we stand and as we sing?